Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
They came from the Philippines and Haiti and Iraq, ironically, to get away from the violence, and China and Brazil, as well as the United States. The 13 victims of Friday's Binghamton massacre were in a place aptly called the American Civic Association. They were there to learn English and study to become U.S. citizens. The shooter, 41-year-old Jivirly Wong, or he really was Jivirly Vung, but he changed it to Wong because he was frustrated that people didn't understand Vung, originally from Vietnam, was a U.S. citizen for more than a decade in this country since he was a teenager in the 1980s, though he still struggled with English and was frustrated by it. Later this morning, we'll talk about the amazing culture of places like the American Civic Association in Binghamton. There are plenty of such centers here in the New York City area. We'll talk about the frustrations of some immigrants who have more trouble with the language than others. Let's talk now about the gun laws and gun store culture, perhaps, that allowed him to remain armed. Wong had New York licenses for two handguns, despite a criminal conviction that was for check forgery in California, a misdemeanor, and some agitated behavior right in the gun store. With us now is Jeffrey Chamberlain. He's an expert in New York State firearms law. He wrote a book called Firearms and Weapons Laws, Gun Control in New York, and he is a lawyer in private practice with the firm of Chamberlain, Kaufman & Jones in Albany. He's a former chief legal officer for the New York State Police. Mr. Chamberlain, thank you so much for coming on WNYC with us. Hello from New York.
Hi.
What do you need to do to get a handgun license in New York State? What do you have to demonstrate?
Well, the first thing you have to demonstrate or do is you have to make a rather extensive application in Broome County, which is Binghamton. The application goes through the sheriff's office. You disclose all your personal information. You provide fingerprints, references. Then the sheriff's office does an investigation to make sure you are who you say you are, and they run a criminal history check. They often run a mental health check. It's not unusual that they will go out and do an actual field investigation, talk to your neighbors, and make sure that you, or try and make sure that you don't have like a drinking problem or some other psychological issue that makes you stick out in the wrong way from the general population. The actual issuing license officer is the county court judge. That's true throughout upstate New York. The judge may or may not call an applicant in for, more investigation or an interview. If the applicant passes the investigation and the criminal history check and the rest of the investigation process, the judge, in his discretion, can issue a license. The license can be restricted in various ways. For example, it can be restricted to hunting and target shooting only, which is the norm in Broome County. Depending on whether or not an applicant shows some particular need for the possession and use of a firearm in some particular way.
Would the standards be different in Binghamton or Broome County than in New York City, or is this one statewide standard?
It's a statewide standard. It is administered county by county or borough by borough. The New York City process is substantially different administratively from the rest of upstate or the rest of the state, but the differences do kind of all exist within the same universe of the state statute.
You said in Broome County the most frequent reason for issuing a gun license would be for hunters. Does that apply to
Or
target shooting. And I guess that's what Mr. Wong did a lot of, target shooting. Would he have put that on his application, or do they take a different kind of look when it's an application for a handgun?
Yes. What we're talking about refers only to handguns.
Only to handguns. It's easier.
With the exception of New York City, there is no state licensing for the possession of shoulder arms, long guns,
rifles,
shotguns.
Now, despite his conviction for check forgery, He bought many guns, and he kept passing his FBI background checks. Why was that conviction not relevant under the law?
It was relevant at the time that he applied for his license. And again, let's assume that the licensing process went through the normal sort of chain of events. The licensing authorities would therefore have known of this conviction.
And I gather the conviction was in 1992, and his initial gun license was in 1996.
Right. And so a licensing officer who has an application from an individual with a criminal conviction, unless that is the type of criminal conviction that is a legal barrier to getting a license, and there are a few of those, felonies, for example, the rest of the convictions would be examined on a case-by-case basis. And the questions would be typically, you know, what kind of crime was it? Was it in any way related to violence or the use of a weapon? How long ago was it? What's the individual's history since then? Was it a 16-year-old who got arrested for shoplifting and she's now 32 and a dentist? Or is this a pattern? Or, you know, those kinds of judgments are made every day by licensing officers as well as many other officials in many other contexts.
So if you were Bernard Madoff and you served your time, you could still theoretically get a gun license because it had no relevance to the potential to shoot people?
Well, I think Mr. Madoff was convicted of a felony, and that would be an absolute bar.
Any felony?
That's correct.
I see. So the fact that the forgery conviction for Mr. Wong was a misdemeanor is what made it not a barrier to getting a gun.
Yes, and of course, I'm only assuming that it was a misdemeanor, because if it had been a felony, it would have been an absolute barrier.
Well, I did read a press report.
It's possible that it fell through the cracks, of course.
Well, I did read a press report, at least, that said it was a misdemeanor check forgery conviction.
He wrote a bad check. You know, normally that's hardly an indicator that would trigger somebody's bell going off on a gun license, assuming, again, that it was old enough and that the individual's record was pretty clean since.
We're talking about the gun law aspects of the Binghamton massacre and the shooter, Jervilly Wong. We can take a few phone calls for our guest, Jeffrey Chamberlain, author of Firearms and Weapons Laws, Gun Control in New York, 212-433-WNYC, or post a comment to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, 212-433-9692. The phone number. Reports from Binghamton are that he was very well known at a local gun store where he bought five or six different weapons in the last 6 months or so. He kept saying he didn't like the guns he bought there, so he would return them or quickly exchange them. He was known to get agitated when people didn't understand his English in the gun store, according to the press reports. Are any of those things red flags regarding someone who might not be quite safe to have guns in his hands?
Not the way you've said it, I don't think. It's certainly not a red flag that gun owners and enthusiasts play, if you will, with different types of weapons. It's certainly not unusual that somebody who doesn't speak the mother tongue gets agitated when people don't understand him. I certainly get that way when I call the helplines in Bangladesh and have trouble understanding the people that are talking to me.
Would gun store owners ever report their concerns about someone who seemed to be particularly agitated over a period of time? Or is it just not done for fear of getting the authorities to crack down on gun rights?
It's often done. Gun store owners or staff frequently will report what they perceive as relevant weird behavior to the licensing authorities. Whether this instance was one of those, I, of course, don't know. And there's no legal obligation to for a civilian just to, you know, to report behavior that they don't like to a licensing authority.
When are immigrants allowed to buy guns? Only after citizenship or in some cases before?
I don't know. Don't know off the top of my head. I'd have to look that up.
Okay. And he was reportedly a citizen when he purchased his first weapon or got his first license to purchase a weapon. Apparently he became a citizen in 95 and bought the weapon in 96. Are there different kinds Well, I guess we cleared that one up already. What are the different... Wong had his license for more than a decade. Would he have ever had to demonstrate anything to renew it, or is it lifetime?
In upstate counties, it is a handgun license is good until revoked. And what that means is that if anything comes to the attention of the law enforcement or licensing authorities, they can and often do review the current status of a license holder. And if, you know, there's been a change in circumstance that makes them no longer fit the criteria, they can have their licenses revoked. In addition, a licensee will have his criminal history updated pretty much any time he buys a new weapon.
Paul in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Paul.
Thank you for taking my call. My question or concern is how many more massacres, how many more deaths will it take for us to have stronger gun control laws? So it is obvious that this murderer shouldn't have had access to gun because he didn't need it to protect business or anything, just target shooting or entertainment. Recently, we had the appointment of a U.S. senator from upstate, Senator Gillibrand,
mm-hmm.
I think she is.
That's correct.
Who is known to be a lobbyist for gun owners, or if you like, who is known to support gun ownership as a quote-unquote constitutional right. But it turns out that over and over again, people who have access to gun use gun to kill others. You know, we're not in a farming state in New York, so to speak, and how is it that this person were allowed to buy guns, and for what purpose?
So, Paul, a lot of people would say that the vast majority of gun owners, especially licensed gun owners, never do commit crimes with their guns, and that they would ask, why shouldn't somebody have the right in this country to own a licensed gun if they like to go and do target shooting, if they're otherwise law-abiding citizens? Because I think you're suggesting that that very thing not be within the law, correct?
I agree with you, sir. But look at, for example, the fact that guns are available at all for non-soldiers, non-policemen, non-law enforcement, is also the reason, is, I'm sure you're aware, that people have access, criminals, if you like, have access to guns. They smuggle to Mexico with that has a lot of impact on the violence there and drug dealing. And in other words, guns should not be, I'm not sure that the constitutional right to have guns is such a good thing, because here in New York, as we just witnessed the last week, and in Mexico, you know, criminals and good people have access to guns because they are available. So the right should, I think the right to have guns should be measured or balanced against the consequences of people, the wrong people, if you like, having access to the same guns.
Paul, thank you very much. And, of course, Jeffrey Chamberlain, a debate in this country probably wouldn't get very far about removing the Second Amendment from the Constitution with the argument that it hasn't been productive or hasn't been protective of our safety. But this is also a line that's been moving over time. The U.S. Supreme Court just recently ruled that the right to bear arms is strictly an individual right and does not come in the context of arming a militia, as people have argued for many years, and even President Obama supported that interpretation. Do you think that makes it easier to get a gun than it ever was, let's say a legal gun?
It hasn't. The Second Amendment case from last year did, in fact, rule that the Second Amendment provides individuals with an individual right to own guns in their home for self-defense. It did not, however, change any of the licensing procedures that are in place in the various states that try and screen individuals. It doesn't say that a felon has a right to own a gun. It doesn't say that an alcoholic who acts out has a right to own a gun. As a matter of fact, there's been somewhere in the neighborhood of 80 to 100 lower court challenges to various types of gun regulations since the Second Amendment case, and none of them has been successful in broadening the existing rights and mm-hmm. responsibilities and rules governing the possession of handguns.
There is a debate that seems to come up whenever there's an incident like this. When gun rights advocates say guns and carry permits in particular, should be easy to get. The theory is that if many people were routinely armed, like if some of the victims in the American Civic Association had been armed in Binghamton on Friday, someone could have stopped Jivirly Wong in his tracks rather than allow his rampage to continue. And I'm curious to get your opinion on this, but it seems to me that, this particular case argues strongly the other way. Precisely because Wong was a longtime legal gun owner, a licensee since 1996, if everyone carries guns in ordinary life, I would think the chances are a percentage of people are going to go off after a history of acceptable behavior, like this guy did, more often than an armed citizen might stop a random criminal. Do you think?
There is very little data that would, I think, support that. At least in New York State, gun crimes committed by licensed handgun owners are so extremely rare as to be almost unquantifiable. Now, it's not perfect. Obviously, we have the Binghamton instance.
But that's today. I'm saying that advocates, after incidents like this, say carrying should be routine. And if we had an essentially armed citizenry rather than the licensed gun owner being the exception, then a lot more crime would be stopped. Do you still think that the statistics that you're citing would prevail? Because, most gun violence is not random and among strangers. Most gun violence is the shooting of people who know their victims, as in this case. So the passions of the moment in your life would seem to me to present more of a risk then the chances of preventing a rare street shooting presents an opportunity. What do you think?
I think that it's important. I think that's the public policy debate. From the legal point of view, it's important to distinguish the licensed handgun owners from the illegal, if you will, handgun owners. The cohorts just simply don't match up very well. The licensed handgun owners are remarkably law-abiding, not perfect, but remarkably law-abiding when it comes to the use and possession of their guns. The non-licensed handgun possessors are responsible for a proportion of gun crimes that are way out of whack with the legal owners.
David in Huntington, you're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Hi, how you doing? Yeah, okay. I just want to say that, you know, the whole idea of licensing, it's kind of an odd thing, whereas, you know, he's licensed to carry a handgun, but in the meantime, he could have just done the same crime with a shotgun. That doesn't need to be licensed.
But maybe it would have been more difficult for him to get into the building with a shotgun because a shotgun presumably would have been bigger and would have shown.
I doubt it. I seriously doubt that. I mean, I think, you know, walking to the front door of a building, pull up in front of the front door and walk in, it's not a big deal. You know, maybe somebody could have responded to it quicker, but the fact that he had a license, you know, just shows that he was qualified to carry it. You know what I mean? It's kind of a moot point to say that, you know, the licensing and the non-licensing would have solved the situation. The situation's really, you know, a problem with people's psychological problems individually. Not
right. Clearly, that's a big factor, definitely. And my main question here was really to clear up why this man who had a history of perceived erratic behavior, including in gun stores, and had a criminal conviction, was allowed to carry a gun, or that nobody brought his behavior to the attention of the authorities. Last thing, Mr. Chamberlain, before you go, we're just about out of time. Comment from our website says upstate licenses are good anywhere upstate. They are not good in New York City. The city is a completely different regime. This is not a minor procedural difference from upstate, and Long Island has its own regime. Most upstate licenses are carry licenses. It's very different here. Do you disagree with that comment?
Some yes, some no. The difference in licensing procedure is not minor. It is within the same universe, but getting a handgun license in New York is a very different kettle of fish from getting it upstate. Most handgun licenses upstate are not broadly carry licenses. They are restricted to hunting or target shooting, and upstate licenses are not good in New York City.
All right. I want to thank Jeffrey Chamberlain, an expert in New York firearms law, the author of Firearms and Weapons Laws, Gun Control in New York. He's an attorney with Chamberlain, Kaufman, and Jones in Albany. Thanks so much for coming on with us.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, Obama wants to psych you out. He has a team of 29 behavioral scientists. Time magazine calls it a secret team. We will lift the veil and see what they do.